I'm speaking on the Central America Health Rights Movement, its history, effectiveness, and relevance for today, with a special reference to activities within APHA. Now, when I refer to medical aid, I'm talking about medical aid as part of a broader solidarity movement. I'm not here referring to medical aid of the kind that's practiced by Doctors Without Borders or to the International Relief Committee for that, as examples of organizations that go into confliction zones around the world and set up their operations, but rather medical aid that's the, you could say, the medical wing of a solidarity movement. The activities of these, and this has happened during the modern era, there were significant medical aid campaigns related to the Spanish Civil War, the Spanish Revolution, the Vietnam War in the United States, the Central America Wars, which is what I'm going to address, and Israel and Palestine situation currently. The activities of these movements tend to focus on material aid, on educational exchanges, sending delegations of health professionals to the country in conflict, hosting in-country conferences, sending clinicians and instructors for both short and long-term tours of duty in the country, bringing healthcare personnel from the conflicted country to the USA to do primarily public education. All of these medical aid movements have as their central motor the mandate to try to educate the American public about what's going on in these conflicts that are often sponsored by our own government, using the what you might call the lens of public health, especially violations of medical neutrality and the health care and public health measures of governments and movements, to bring the conflict into focus. We do this through hosting local educational events in all kinds of venues, press coverage when we can get it, publishing in the medical literature, and bringing, as I say, healthcare personnel from the conflicted zones into the United States to tell their stories. We spend some amount of effort, not much, on congressional action, but we do, and organizing within healthcare organizations, including and certainly the APHA. So to get to Central America, if people aren't familiar with the history, it can be the last 500 years can really be summarized in a few sentences, which is that in 1519, the Spanish conquistadores arrived in the region looking for wealth to export back to the Spanish crown in the form of gold. They didn't find any gold, so they did the next best thing, which was they conquered and press-ganged the indigenous populations into the production of agricultural commodities for export and set up basically a feudal system where the indigenous peoples became serfs, if not slaves, to the large landowners who were descended directly from the conquistadors. And that system has remained intact really throughout the region up until the revolutions of the 1980s. If you're interested in this history, I would highly recommend Penny Lernew's book. It's out of print, but I think you can find it online, Cry of the People. It's an excellent documentary history of especially the role of the Catholic Church. It was Catholic workers, priests, nuns, and lay workers at the base who took the Vatican II imperative of a preferential option for the poor and carried it out at the base level, and it cost many of them their lives. This was not supported by the church hierarchy, but at the base, they took it seriously, and they were the real force that enabled the mass movements to move forward. So with the victory of the Nicaraguan Revolution, the Sandinista Revolution, in July of 1979, the Sandinista Revolutionary Government immediately launched a literacy crusade throughout the country, which was highly successful. It brought the overall illiteracy rate down from the low 70% to probably under 20% in a year of activity. These are some of the popular health materials. The Nicaraguan the Revolutionary Government's Ministry of Health made a serious effort to address basic conditions that led to conditions of high morbidity and mortality. So this one says how to treat diarrhea. This is one on vaccinations. Here's a manual for popular health workers. Because of the level of organization that the revolutionary enterprise had required, which continued in the years of the Sandinista government, they were able to plan and execute a mass malaria chemo prophylaxis campaign. The idea was to get every single person in the country to take antimalarials during the same 3-day period. with the hope that it could break the back of malaria transmission, that if you had everybody who, for the same 3 days, mosquitoes could bite and not infect, then perhaps you could make a huge impact on malaria. This had never been tried before on a national scale like this, and although it failed to substantially interrupt transmission in that transmission rates went back up to baseline after about a year, they probably did prevent some 9,200 cases, as documented by Dick Garfield and Sten Vermond in this piece in The Lancet, and had a lot of training going on as well. So our domestic support began in an organized fashion at the second national meeting of the National Network in Solidarity with the People of Nicaragua, which is the major solidarity network for the Sandinista Revolution within the United States. The meeting was held in Detroit in 1979, and out of this, some of us who were there, who were healthcare types, organized this Nicaragua medical aid campaign. And all over the country, small groups formed to sort of do medical aid for Nicaragua. This was the group from New York, Medical Aid for Nicaragua, New York, or MANI for short, that organized early on. And again, you can see the names at the bottom, Vic Seidel, Ruth Seidel, Larry Guttmacher, and others who are still active today. The Nicaraguan government was delighted to have our participation. This is a letter from Dr. Jacobo Marcos of the Ministry of Health of Managua, within the first year of the revolution, welcoming us, because otherwise they've been completely cut off from the United States. United States official organizations and many nonprofits were afraid to go to Nicaragua because of the hostility of the Reagan administration. At the same time, groups of health workers were popping up to support the struggle in El Salvador. This was the group in Boston, the Boston Committee for Medical Aid to El Salvador, which was organized primarily by nurses. And I have a whole second chapter of this presentation on El Salvador, but for time purposes, I'm only going to mention the activities around Nicaragua. I'd love to talk about Salvador. There's a lot to be said. People could ask in the questions, or maybe next year I'll come back and do round two. So these are some of the activities that we engaged in early on. Within months of the triumph of the Sandinista Revolution, we brought Adolfo Chamorro to the United States. He was Vice Minister of Health at the time. This was an article that appeared in a Harvard Medical Area newspaper about his visit. We got some attention in the popular press. The Boston Sunday Globe wrote an article about his visit. We took him down to New York to speak to the social medicine residency program. We continued to do education at every forum, at every chance we had. We had Dick Garfield at the Harvard Medical School. We produced a slideshow. For those of you of a certain age, you'll remember that that meant getting expensive copies of a Kodachrome and then shipping them around, and people would drop them in a slide projector. Very expensive, but also very important. Material aid went on in many different forms. This was a campaign to send nursing books to Nicaragua. Remember, this is in the pre-internet era. The group in Rhode Island built a clinic. The Vecino, or Neighbor Project, built a clinic in Esteli, and we helped to staff it with a family physician and his family for several years. Again, that effort made it into the local newspaper. I can't emphasize how important we think this is. It's not just a question of bringing what little material support that we can give to these people who are under assault, but it's also what we can do back in the States to educate our own people. This involved nurses. This was a meeting on the role of the nurse at Boston City Hospital. Respiratory therapists organized. Threka, therapists for health rights in Central America. Nutritionists organized. What nutritionists can do to stop the war in Nicaragua. And the APHA was involved from the very start. This is Roberto Belmar, who at that time was at Montefiore, making reporting back to the APHA about the progress that the revolutionary government had made in health. Now, the first time that these independent groups around the Northeast got together was in October of 1982. We got together at NYU in New York, and it was mostly a number of groups from the New York City area and us from Boston. It was the first time that we had sort of put our heads together and said, hey, we're doing the same thing. Let's trade resources and whatnot. The following year, the group in California, specifically in the Bay Area, the Bay Area Committee for Health Rights in Central America, sponsored a health colloquium in Managua and invited people from mostly health and public health people from the United States to Managua to meet with our counterparts, or in Spanish it's homologos, our people who do the same work, our homologues, so to speak, to present to each other and have an exchange. And that was when we first, that was the first time that all of us, that representatives of all of these groups from the East and West Coast and the Midwest got together and met each other, and we decided to form a network, the National Central America Health Rights Network. And the following year, the colloquium, which continued and had a good 10, 12-year run, was co-sponsored by, as you can see, not only the Bay Area Committee, but the National Central America Health Rights Network, or NCARN for short. So the colloquium went on into the early 90s, and NCARN similarly had a run into the early 90s. We had our own annual meetings at which we would host in a city, in a different city around the country, and bring in speakers from the local movement and from outside the movement, and bring in a local audience. We published a journal called Lynx. This was our very first issue, and it became really rather a rather good read, I think. It had about a 10-year run. The Nicaraguan government was recognized by UNICEF for bringing down child health by 30, infant mortality rates by 30%. This is not, it was not in dispute that the Nicaraguan revolutionary Sandinista government was making enormous strides in health and public health. And Oxfam wrote it up as this monograph, Nicaragua, the Threat of a Good Example. And that encapsulates the reason why the Reagan administration could not tolerate this success. It was not because of the Soviet Union. It was not because of the Cold War. That was a freak, that was a convenient boogeyman on which to, with which to motivate the drive for war. And specifically, the Reagan administration began organizing the Contra Army, which was the armed forces of the fallen dictator Anastasio Somoza in Honduras and in El Salvador, right from the start, and launched the war to derail the revolution. And the way they did it was with low-intensity conflict, or low-intensity warfare, it's called by the people who write about this stuff. And that means you don't confront armies on a field of battle. What you do is, in this situation, you go to the places where the government has made progress and you attack and destroy them. They are soft targets, and that includes clinics and healthcare workers. And clinics were destroyed, and healthcare workers were murdered and threatened. And it wasn't for a couple of years that the press ever took notice of this, that this was happening. This Newsweek cover was from 1982. This was the first recognition in the mainstream media that something big was going on very close to our border. Remember, this is pre-internet. We were all limited in our sources of information. Now, we know it was going on. The Nicaraguan people knew it was going on from the very start. But the general public in the United States was in the dark. So it became even more important for us to get this out. And so as the war heated up more and more, we tried to get the message. Here's an article from the Boston Globe. It's actually from the Boston Globe, that mentions our efforts to get medical aid to Nicaragua. We brought up Dora Maria Tejas, who was then the Minister of Health, to speak about health and war. Got her an article into the Boston Globe and into the local Worcester paper. Again, this may be the first time that a person who reads the Worcester Telegram is hearing about what's actually going on in Nicaragua. This was a wire service story that quotes our report on health and war, the health effects of the war against Nicaragua. Medical neutrality is a concept that is extremely important here. Medical neutrality refers to the right of health workers, and this is embodied in the Geneva Conventions, to reach civilian populations in times of conflict. This is in all of the countries, the governments of Central America and the U.S. government are signatory to these conventions. Yet there was direct violation sponsored by the U.S. government of medical neutrality. This piece appeared in The Lancet, The Epidemiology of Aggression, Health Consequences of the War in Nicaragua, written by two docs from San Francisco, Dave Siegel and Bobby Barron, and our beloved Paul Epstein, who passed away in this past year. Paula Braveman and her group, which included Vic Seidel and Carola Eisenberg, who was a dean at Harvard Medical School, about contra violence, violating medical neutrality, got that into the New York Times. And here's the point. We had resolutions that were passed by the APHA that were very forthright at the time. And this is at a time, and again, if you weren't alive or paying attention at that time, you wouldn't understand the ferocity with which the Reagan administration was advancing its war effort against this little tiny poor country to destroy it. Humanitarian aid for the Contras was sending. Reagan wanted money to send boots and rations to the Contra army, in addition to having the CIA continue to manage them. So the APHA says the government acknowledges that the current government of Nicaragua has given great priority to health services, and that fearing that the Reagan administration's stated policy to replace the current Nicaraguan government will reverse all these advances. And observing that U.S.-supported military incursions have killed 12 physicians, that U.S.-financed attacks in October destroyed stored medicines, etc., commends the efforts of the Nicaraguan government to improve health status, condemns the recently escalating military intervention of the U.S. government, urges the U.S. Congress to stop the funding for the destabilization of Nicaragua and to use these funds to improve health services within the United States and in Central America. So here the APHA is saying exactly what we were saying. And they did not, the APHA at that time did not seem to fear that this resolution would somehow enrage the Reagan administration and cause it to do bad things to those of us in public health. I'll come back to why I think that's important. Further resolutions were passed, this one in 1984, which harked back to the previous resolution, this one in 1987. In terms of the movement, we continue. This was the San Francisco group's report on obstacles to health. This is one of the last pieces I'll show you about the work. In 1984, a group was organized, a student group at the Harvard School of Public Health, to conduct a study of the health effects of war in two communities, one in the war zone and one not in the war zone. So we organized, we got some funding, we had trouble getting Harvard to sponsor us. They eventually refused, but we called ourselves the Nicaraguan Health Study Collaborative at Harvard CS, which is the unit of the Ministry of Health. I've got to shut my phone off. The Ministry of Health and the National University of Nicaragua. So this was your basic study. It was a one-to-one comparison, which every epidemiologist in this room and everywhere knows is hardly conclusive. But nonetheless, we found some very important findings on the effect of war in this in the community in the war zone compared to that not in the war zone. The American Medical News, which is the AMA newspaper, picked up on it. This article was on the front page when a quarter of a million physicians opened their American Medical News that year with some of our findings. And significantly, Reagan had made the charge that the Sandinistas were using the ration card system that they had created because they were under embargo from the United States as well as under military attack. The Reagan administration said the Sandinista government is using these ration cards as a means of population control. Our group that was in the war zone town of Acoyapa in central Nicaragua, which is actually where the population was more supportive of the Contras, interestingly. When we got there, we had to figure out the sampling frame. How were we going to figure out who to sample? We talked to the community organizers in the village, in the city, and they said, well, we have a complete list of everybody because they all have ration cards. And we said, well, we're not sure that everybody's got a ration card, so before we do the selective sampling, we need to prove that. So we knocked on 50 consecutive doors in a random area of town, and we said, do you have a ration card? And every one of the 50 had a ration card. So when Reagan made that claim, we were able to say, wait a minute, we were in this town, in the war zone, in a contra-supportive area, and everyone had their ration card. So you're lying, Mr. President. And the New York Times printed the letter. Whether that made any difference or not, you know, I can't say. I think the alternative, which is to not do anything about it, is not acceptable in these kind of situations if we believe in democracy and we see what our government is doing. As I say, I'm not going to have a chance to talk about the work at El Salvador. I'd love to at some other point. I'll just end with this letter that came out from the NCARN. It's kind of poignant. We'll look back at it. It came out from our national office, which we did have a national office in New York with one staff person. But we wrote to everybody in the APHA following the annual meeting in Chicago that year in 1989 asking for their support. I'll end there, and thanks very much for your attention.